Hello and welcome to another edition of Hashtag Sixers, part of the Hashtag Basketball Podcast Network. I am your host, Jordan Christmas, the lead writer for the 76ers on HashtagBasketball.com. Also joining me from HashtagBasketball.com, as he does every week, is Christian DeLuzio. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Jordan. Hope everybody else is doing well, too.
All right, so a few little quick things. The Sixers haven't really played that much since the last pod again. There was the London game, of course. Sixers jumped out to a 16-point lead, I believe, in the first half. And then in the second half was just a completely different story. And it ended up being a blowout win for the Celtics. And then on Monday, on Martin Luther King Day, and what was a weird... it was a weird Martin Luther King Day for the NBA all around. There were scraps everywhere. But the Sixers were able to hold on to the lead at the end after having what was a 22-point lead at one point in the game against the Toronto Raptors. And it ended with Ben Simmons and Kyle Lowry being ejected after talking trash for pretty much the whole last minute of the game. And if you saw on the replay, Ben Simmons pointed to the locker room to Kyle Lowry, basically saying, meet me back there. Yeah. And Kyle ran to the locker room. He's like, okay, but nothing. There was reports of an altercation, but it turns out there was nothing. Kyle Lowry said that he was there, but Ben wasn't there, which, I mean, you could look at it any way you want. I'm just glad there wasn't an altercation. What was your takeaway from the weird stuff that happened on MLK Day?
Kyle Lowry's not going to fight Ben Simmons. Come on.
Yeah, I know. Nobody in the NBA wants to fight.
No, but no, I mean, it was, you know, it's the other thing too you got to look at is the start time too. I mean, these guys are used to playing every, you know, at nighttime, 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night. And, you know, you move up a start time to 1 o'clock. I think the game was at 1:30 Eastern time, at least. I'm not going to make an excuse. I'm not going to say it changes everything too much, but it throws you off a little bit. I know as a former athlete in college, I played baseball and most of our games were, you know, 12 o'clock in the afternoon or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Occasionally you had the night game at like 8 o'clock at night and it would throw you off a little bit. It would, or you'd have the 9 a.m. game and it would throw you off a little bit. So it's just, it could be something small like that. It could have been the fact that, you know, it was a holiday and, you know, you're kind of in the national spotlight on that day. It really could have been anything, but, you know, hey, I mean, a win is a win. I don't, you know, whatever they got to do to win the game. They had a big lead, like you said, and they kind of let it squander away, but a win's a win. I think I said that last week. It don't matter.
Yeah. Well, it was a win, but it did come at a cost. J.J. Redick hurt his knee coming off of a screen from DeLon Wright. Toronto Raptors player DeLon Wright kind of banged his knee into Redick's leg, and he has a small crack in his fibula bone. In the press release, they released some big medical term that I just can't remember, but he's going to be out 10 to 14 days, and it kind of is it's a big loss for the Sixers, and, you know, J.J. Redick has been pretty much on fire from three since I'm pulling up the numbers right now, but J.J. Redick has pretty much been on fire. He's an important player for, you know, the spacing of the offense. There's not a lot of shooters on the 76ers, and he's the one who provides spacing. And I'm pulling up the numbers right now since basically when he came back from his hamstring injury. Since Christmas Day, he's been shooting 46% from three on seven attempts and averaging 20 points a game. And really, I mean, I've said it a bunch already, but really just his spacing is just vital because there really is no backup guards or wings off the bench that could shoot like him. Robert Covington, he's still a really good shooter, and I think teams have game planned for that, and they're not letting him get the open looks that he used to. But he really, Redick and Covington are the only guys who provide spacing, and having just one of those guys out, that's gonna be really tough for basically how this roster is constructed, because it is, we've talked about this before, it's a poorly constructed roster from a guards and wing standpoint, and also from a standpoint of we have a bunch of bigs who can't shoot. And when you look at the schedule, we have the Celtics tomorrow, recording this on a Wednesday, the Milwaukee Bucks, Then we play the Spurs and the Thunder and then the Bucks again before the end of January. So this is kind of a crucial time to lose one of your best players.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I mean, that's a big loss for them because, like you said, it's a spacing issue now because you don't have to – I mean, you don't really have to worry about, you know, someone – you know, getting out to somebody on a three-point shot. I mean, he was their top three-point, you know, weapon, regardless of, you know, whatever percentages you want to look at between him and Covington. But he's really their top three-point threat. And with him off the floor for 2 weeks, I mean, it's a big loss. It really is. Especially, I know we're going to talk about this since the video of Markelle Fultz shooting threes doesn't exactly help the conscience a little bit. But
doesn't inspire much confidence.
No, but it is like I said it's a tough loss, but I mean they're gonna have to get through it. I think I said last week this is a stretch here right before the All-Star break where they gotta keep the pace that they're at right now and sitting in that 9 spot and 8, 9, 10 spot to make a nice push towards a low seed. But they gotta find a way through it. I don't know what they're gonna do. I don't know how they're gonna change up their game plan or you know if they're gonna have. They're obviously going to have to go involve Embiid and Simmons a lot more now with Redick off the floor and kind of maybe play inside out with Embiid. But I don't know what they're going to do because it's a lot of shooting and a lot of three point shooting threat that you're missing for 2 weeks. And I don't know how many games do they have between now and his pending.
But it's 10 to 14 days, so he's pretty much going to be missing – pretty much he was probably going to be reevaluated after the Thunder game is what it looks like.
Okay.
Because it was 2 days ago they announced he was going to – or yesterday, actually. So probably around the Thunder or Milwaukee Bucks game is when – or the back – there's a back-to-back with the Thunder and the Bucks on the 28th yeah. and the 29th. So I imagine he's probably going to be reevaluated after that.
Yeah, so I mean 6, 7, 8 games. I mean,
and even when JJ Redick isn't shooting the ball like well, his spacing is just so key. Like Brett Brown likes to run these pet sets where Embiid does a dribble handoff with Redick, and because Embiid is a large, gigantic human being, Redick can get around Embiid and have pretty much a clean look. Pretty much a lot of the time they run that play, or they could run like a little dribble handoff into a mini pick and roll with Redick and Embiid rolling to the basket. And because defenders jump out at Redick, that just leaves Embiid free or vice versa. You pretty much have to – it's one of those plays where you have to pick your poison, which, you know, in the NBA is a very important type of play to have. So it'll be interesting. It looks like they called up James Young from the D League based on – you know, social media pictures from the Sixers practice today. He was in the building in the new complex in a South Jersey, I believe, is where it's located, or Camden. And it also looks like maybe we'll see a little bit more of Justin Anderson. I would definitely, I guess we have to see what TLC will also bring, even though he's been flat out terrible this year on both sides of the ball. Hopefully maybe he could get some wide open looks because the defense doesn't respect his shot right now. Maybe he could get some looks and start knocking them down, but Redick is no doubt a big loss. You brought up Markelle Fultz earlier, and I guess we should talk about this. Pretty much, there were videos surfacing from the practices in London. Markelle Fultz's shot did not look great, and also a video came out on Sunday when the team was practicing the day before the Raptors game. It also did not look great. His free throw actually looks good. There's no hitch in it. He's, you know, bending his knees more. He's bringing the ball up more over, it's not like down near his chin, and he's not like shooting it like I've said a billion times, like Shaq blindfolded. It's actually a clean, fluid motion, it looks like. And within 12 feet of the hoop, the shot looks normal. It's just when he gets out to mid range and three, it looks weird. Everybody has debated about the injury. It's one of the strangest things ever about the shoulder injury and what it did in relation to him changing his shot. And I've always said, I believe he tried to change his shot to make himself better. and at some point he had a shoulder injury and that basically screwed it up, and it looks like that, and he's just unable to get his shot back from Washington. I don't think he forgot how to shoot. You could tell in summer league he changed his shot. It was a more compact, quicker release, and it worked. And then he tried to change it further, and then at some point the shoulder injury happened. But there were some really candid comments from Brett Brown during that practice on Sunday. Pretty much, and it's probably the most honest quotes that I've seen from him related to the situation the whole year. Somebody asked him what's it going to take for him to return to the court, and Brett Brown flat out just said, quote here, by Derek Bodner's article from The Athletic, "I think what he needs to be able to do is shoot a basketball. He needs to feel he could go out there and shoot a basketball." That doesn't exactly inspire much confidence.
It sounds like he doesn't have much. When he was just talking about it, it just didn't seem like he had confidence.
No. And I'm going to be honest with you. Like, you know, last pod we did, I thought he was going to return for the Raptors game.
Yeah.
I don't think he's coming back this year. I don't think he's going to play.
It's in the back of my mind. I mean, after seeing it, I mean, we went back and forth on Twitter after that video surfaced, and I think that's what I said. I don't think I said it. I'd be surprised if he's out a year, but I said I wouldn't be surprised if he's still hurt, like seriously hurt.
Yeah, and Brown kind of said he doesn't know if there's still some soreness with it, or he kind of backed out of his original statement and said that I have the quote right here. "I don't know if we could say the shoulder is 100%. The doctors say that better than me, but it's certainly getting better enough to where they have allowed him to practice and shoot threes and pretty much do everything else that the team does," end quote. So I really just don't know. Even if the shoulder's better, I don't think you can put him out there this year unless that shot is fixed, because that's what the team drafted him for. It's going to be a disaster if he can't shoot beyond 12 feet. We already have a player who can't shoot beyond 10 feet in Ben Simmons, and you just can't put him out. He's 19 years old. He's going to be – the fans are going to turn on – I know the fans are just going to turn on him when they see his shot and how broken it is. I believe he can fix his shot. From everything I've read about Markelle Fultz, he's a gym rat. He loves – and I know that's a, you know, old sports cliche. Sports cliche, you know, oh, he's a gym rat, he brings his lunch pail to work every day, blah blah blah. But if you actually read stories about Fultz, he eats, sleeps, and breathes basketball. He worked his way — he was not in the top 100 recruiting, I believe, when he was coming out of high school, and he worked so hard that he became the consensus number one pick. I believe in his work ethic, and I believe the shot will be fixed in the off season, but I just don't think there's enough time in the regular season to, you know, fix this shot and fix it during the game. You have to — this is an off season thing. And I wouldn't want the team to play him, put him out there when he's clearly not himself. And I just don't see how he plays this year.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm still set on the fact that I think he's hurt. Still, I don't know what it is. I don't know, again, why they won't disclose anything, or if they're holding something back. I don't know why.
Wait, you're questioning the Sixers and them disclosing stuff?
I know. It's weird. Never done that before. but I don't know. I don't know what it is. I still can't – I understand people are going to say, you know, well, you know, he wanted to maybe switch up his shooting technique to have a quicker release or whatever you want to say. But I just can't buy the fact that a guy with so much success in college – we'll just do that and then just stick with it. I can't buy that. The only thing that makes sense to me is that he's actually hurt more than he is, and they're just trying to throw it under the rug and hope it gets better. I just don't understand why they just don't shut the guy down and just forget about it for now.
You don't believe that he tried to go out of his way to change his shot? Because I think he clearly did.
I mean, if he did, I don't know why. To me, it just doesn't make sense to me why you would want to do that. He didn't even like play in a game and try to see how his shot would be. He just came right in and automatically changed up his shot for him. I just can't imagine why someone would want to do that. And I understand it's a different game between college and the NBA. I'm all for that, but the first look you got was a weird free throw and just not the same player that you saw at Washington. It's the first look you got. I just can't imagine a guy at 19 years old being the first pick out of college all of a sudden just going, well, this guy said to do this, so I'm going to do it right now. I just can't imagine a kid doing that. That's just me.
He's a kid, and maybe he tried to do it out of the willingness to get better, but it actually hurt the team. And obviously he's probably frustrated that he can't play and that his shot is broken and stuff. But I think he was well intended in what he tried to do, but it kind of messed up what happened, if that makes any sense.
I think we're both in agreement that at some point he obviously got hurt. But
yes, I believe that. The whole shoulder injury is fake stuff. Yeah. I don't believe that.
Yeah, no, I don't believe that at all. And the whole thing with his shot is because he's hurt or whatever. You know, whatever. They're both correlated. But to me, still seeing that, it just doesn't – something just doesn't fit right with me that it's still – this is still going on. And just the hearing Brett Brown's press conference and just hearing what he had to say and how he said it, it just does not seem – it seems like he knows more than we do, which is usually the case anyway. And – it just doesn't sound like he has any confidence. And me looking into it more than maybe I should be, I think he's hurt more than he is. I do.
Yeah, one thing's for sure. This is the most strange storyline that I have ever seen following the NBA. And I have watched the NBA since I was 7, 8 years old. And I never heard of a number one pick trying to change a shot and then this shoulder injury. Just the whole thing is just it's weird. It's really weird.
I'm with you. I can't wait till next year's story. I wonder what that one's gonna be.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be fantastic. Another storyline that I'm trying not — I've had a lot of rants on this hashtag Sixers podcast, and I'm really trying not to have another one, but the last few days have just made me really upset, and I'm going to lay out the backstory for our listeners here. So All-Star voting closed, I believe. Yeah, it was on Monday night. All-Star voting for the fans closed, you know, the hashtag NBA vote. You could do it on Facebook, Twitter. You can go to the actual NBA website and fill out your own ballot without using the hashtag. And you know, there are clearly locks on the Eastern Conference team. You know, obviously LeBron and Giannis are on there, and you know, you could argue, or DeMar DeRozan's on there, Kyrie Irving's on there, and there was some debate among the national media about what the last spot should be. And you would think that this is amazing. You would think that a guy — and I know writers nowadays don't like to use the counting stats as much, and I hate to use the counting stats — it is amazing to me that a guy who is averaging 24 points a game and 11 rebounds per game — and yes, I'm rounding up because the decimal points are higher than 5, and in math class I was told to round up when it's higher than 5. It is amazing to me that a guy with those averages is now being penalized by the national media because of lack of games. So we've had Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, great writer, by the way, love reading his work. Zach Lowe, also a great writer, I also love reading his work. Zach Lowe and Bill Simmons together on a podcast starting Al Horford over Joel Embiid for the last All-Star starting spot because of lack of games played. It's infuriating to me. It is so infuriating to me that we are still troping out this BS again. Joel Embiid has ostensibly been a better player than Al Horford. Now, I'm going to do an awards podcast later tonight with Nick Agar Johnson of #basketball.com. And I have Al Horford on my all NBA third team so far. and Al Horford has been a really valuable player for the Celtics, but he is not better than Joel Embiid. I don't know why we keep doing this. Last year, they tried to do the whole games thing with Rookie of the Year, and I understand why they did it for All-Star Game last year, but Embiid should have won Rookie of the Year last year. He was the best rookie. Joel Embiid is better than Al Horford. He has more value to the Sixers than Al Horford. If you switch Joel Embiid and Al Horford and put Al Horford on the Sixers and Joel Embiid on the Celtics would be probably the favorite in the Eastern Conference. if Brad Stevens got his hands on Joel Embiid, the Celtics would be the favorite coming out of the Eastern Conference. It's absurd to me that... I know, okay, so for example, Joel Embiid has played one more game than Stephen Curry has this season. I didn't think we'd be at the point in the season where we'd say that, but that's the fact. And I guarantee you everybody's going to have Steph Curry starting on the Western Conference All-Stars. And by the way, they should. Stephen Curry should be starting on the All-Star team. But if we're going to use this old trope of games played and minutes restriction, which by the way, somehow the national media believes that Embiid is still on a minutes restriction, even though Brett Brown has said 500 million times that he's not. He is averaging 31 minutes a game. If you're going to use this games argument, be consistent. Don't start Stephen Curry then. This is ridiculous. And also the Celtics have played five more games than the Sixers have played. I am just really annoyed. And then smarter than you basketball Twitter's trying to say, oh, well, it's closer than Sixers fans realize. No, it's not. I'm sorry. It's not. I think people are I was listening to WIP before we got on, and I was listening to the Rice to Ricky Sanchez radio show, and Spike Eskin brought up a good point, and I've been thinking about this too. I think for some reason, the first 2 years of Joel Embiid's career has really put a stain on the national perception of Joel Embiid. I think they can't believe that he is this good right now. And for some reason, they can't get past the fact that he missed two full seasons. But all seasons are independent. This year, Joel Embiid is clearly better than Al Horford. If you left him off the All-Star team last year, I understand that because he had missed like 15 games to that point. But he has missed 9 games. He has been relatively healthy. And when Joel Embiid doesn't play, the Sixers are 2-7 and have the 27th worst defense in the whole entire NBA, and when he's on the court, they have the best defense in the NBA, ranked better than the Celtics. What are we doing here?
Yeah, right. You good? I was just letting you go.
Sorry, I've been going on for this long, but
I was an all-timer right there.
This is insanity. Like how?
Embiid's better than Al Horford. Everybody can agree on that. It's just the national spotlight of the Boston Celtics, and they're the one seed, and I don't know. I don't really get too, amped up about the All-Star stuff because it's just, it's a nice accolade, but you know who the best players in the NBA are. You know
yes.
who they are.
Yes,
you
know what I mean? I know the All-Star.
They should be recognized for that. They should be recognized as being the best player, as the best however many players are in the All-Star game. But – It's just all caught up in national spotlight and national media, and Al Horford's on the if the Celtics were a 5 seed right now, it would be Joel Embiid would be the clear cut over Al Horford. But to me, I think since the Celtics are the 1 seed, Al Horford's in there. I don't agree with it. I think that's bogus, but I think that has something to do with it. I think all that All-Star voting and the MVP race and all those awards, The team's records play way too much into it because those are individual awards and they should be given to the people to the players who have the best individual statistics. MVP, for example, like obviously Russell Westbrook won last year, but other people were making a case for guys because they had better records, like James Harden because they had better. Russell Westbrook averaged a triple double. It's not even a debate. This year, Joel Embiid, statistics, way better than
that's a whole different argument. I had Harden as the MVP last year.
Well, all right. We'll save that for a later day.
Yeah, let's save that for a later podcast.
But my point is, like, this year. Embiid's statistics, way better than Al Horford's, and he's played in less games. It's not even – to me, it's not a debate, and I don't like to get caught up in all that, but it's just I obviously, you feel a lot stronger.
Neither
–
okay, All-Stars, you're right. All-Stars, it's like with the NFL, right? Pro Bowl or – the Pro Bowl is a joke. All-Star games are a joke, right? But – well, for one, I'd like to see the Sixers have an all-star. You know, it's been a while since we've had an all-star. But there's just this, I don't know why, basketball coverage has gotten smarter in a lot of ways, right? But we tend to just overthink stuff. And the national media, and it's not their fault. It's impossible to follow every single team to the degree that the local fans do. But at least do some research. Don't throw out the trope of because he's missed games. The ironic thing is, in that Bill Simmons Zach Lowe podcast yesterday on the Lowe Post, they did a Bill Simmons pod this morning picking the Western Conference All-Stars. But yesterday when they picked Eastern Conference All-Stars, Bill Simmons said earlier in the pod, "Oh, I don't think Steph Curry should be punished because he missed 15 games due to an ankle injury." But later in the same podcast, he said that he had Al Horford starting over Joel Embiid because of games played, when he's missed only 9 games. He has played in 77% of the games so far. That is way more than what he has last year. And by the way, quick little side note, we should knock on wood because Joel Embiid has now matched his game total from last year, and we hope it keeps going. But I feel like there has been a lot of debate about the process and the tanking and whose side are you on? Do you want to be on the wrong side of history? Are you on the right side of history? Are you anti-tanking, pro-tanking? What are the pros and cons of it? Whatever. I feel like a lot of the media who was on the side of criticizing the process and calling the hinky truthers basically psychos and, you know, you don't know any better, saying you don't know any better. I feel like because the results of this are bearing fruit with two young franchise players and hopefully another number one pick who can remember who he is, I feel like they're just trying to die on a hill they're trying to die on a hill in whatever way they can, whether it be, oh, well, we can't name Embiid Rookie of the Year, even though there's no prerequisite to how many games you need to play to win Rookie of the Year. If you're the best rookie, you're the best rookie. if you need 31 games to tell you that Joel Embiid is better than Malcolm Brogdon, then I don't know what you're watching. Like, Joel Embiid is clearly better than Malcolm Brogdon. Embiid has played a career high in minutes per game. He has increased his rebounding by 5 rebounds a game. He has increased his scoring. The Sixers have the best defense in the NBA when he plays. He has ostensibly a better impact on his team than Al Horford. And some of that is noise. Embiid does, like, the Sixers roster is clearly inferior to the Celtics, but that makes his on and off numbers all that more impressive. Like, the Celtics are still going to be a good team when Al Horford doesn't play. That's not to say Al Horford isn't a valuable player. That doesn't mean that he's a star that's underrated. I think Al Horford is underrated and has been for the majority of his career. But to throw out the game's excuse and not be consistent with it, that's what gets me.
I feel like you'd put Embiid in an MVP race right now. Sounds like you would.
Well, I had him. I did, when we did the quarter awards podcast, when Embiid only missed like 3 games, I did have him in the top 5 when the Sixers had a better record and stuff, but he's not there now. But I'm just saying, people, be consistent and do your research and just realize that Embiid is just, can we not overthink this? There's this tendency by smart NBA Twitter to just overthink stuff and to, you know, agonize over numbers and on and off numbers.
Process haters too, like people that were just against
exactly
like you said, against the tanking and all that. A lot of it is just they're just stuck on that, and they'll never, you know, come around to it. That's part of it too.
Yeah, well, I got a lot off my chest. let's go to the next thing.
Good.
What
you can go to You can go to sleep now. You'll be able to sleep all right tonight.
No, I won't, because if Embiid doesn't make the All-Star team, I'm probably going to have a heart attack, and you're going to have to find a new host of this podcast.
No podcast next week, people.
Okay, well, moving on from that, you know, just scorching drop the mic rant. The Sixers are 8 games away from matching their win total from last year. They are 20-20. They're a game behind the Detroit Pistons for the 8th and final spot in the Eastern Conference for the playoff race. But I think it's time. I just wanted to talk a little bit about it, because we've talked about it before, but the Sixers are going to, they're on pace to be a 500 team. And if they do finish like 42-42, that's a 14 win improvement from last year. And double digit win improvements like that don't happen that often in the NBA. And I think, you know, through all the Brett Brown stuff, through all the fire Brett Brown takes, the Fultz drama, the overreactions after we lose or blow leads, through all of that, somehow we're 500. And if you had told me before the season that we'd be 20-20 before, you know, January, on midway through January, I would take that.
Yeah, I mean, like I've been saying the whole time, they're a 500 team. That's where they're going to finish, right around there. They're going to get to 40 wins. And I know we've been saying the past couple of weeks, oh, well, you know, when Fultz comes back, you know, then you'll really get to see. At this point, I can't really bank on him coming back. I can't.
No, I don't think he's going to play this year.
And if he doesn't, well, look, they're still a 500 team without him. He hasn't played all year. So it's still, whatever you want to measure as a successful season, an improvement of, what do you say, they had 8 more wins to tie, 28 wins. If they're going to improve on that, obviously, they should get to 40 wins. They're probably going to. That's a successful season in my book. No one expected them to – they're not going to win the finals. They're not going to get to the conference championship. They have a shot to make the playoffs. That's a successful season without their number one overall pick, with the whole – all the storylines going on this year.
Basically, Embiid and Simmons playing together for the first time.
Yeah, the first time these guys are all playing together. Yeah, the chemistry wasn't there early on. They're still not 100% there. Simmons doesn't take a jump shot, and if they get 40 wins, you're telling me that's a bad season? No, I won't take that at all. I mean, that's a great season for them, and they're only going to improve. So, I think a 500 team is exceeding expectations for them. I think that's where they were going to be, but I think it exceeds expectations for what they were given and what their situation is now, given the fact that Fultz, to me, I don't see him playing this year. And now Redick's down for 10 to 14 days, and nobody thought Ben Simmons wasn't going to shoot the ball, you know, take jump shots at least. And they're still right in the thick of things to get a 7 or an 8 spot. So I can't really complain what they're doing right now. You got to be excited. You got to be happy for this, the rest of this year, and for years to come.
Yeah, and the other good part about it is, like you said, you know, Markelle Fultz has only played 4 games this year, and he did not look like the player that he was at Washington. But we have possibly either 2 draft picks coming this summer or a top 5 pick next year, depending on where that Lakers pick lands. So there's still some draft capital there. We have max cap space this summer. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, even though I told you I'm out on Brian Colangelo, it still will be interesting to see how this roster is fully constructed. But please, just no more bigs that can't shoot. We have like 5 of them. We have 5 of those.
Yeah, too many of those. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing they have. They still need more pieces. They're not a complete team yet, obviously.
No.
So
no.
These next 2 drafts are going to be important. And again, I'll preach again, the second round's important. And free agency, again, is coming up. So, you know. This year is a chance for their core to get playoff experience, and I think that's important for them to get. And if they don't get it, well, they still had a good season, and they have a chance to improve on it through the draft, through free agency, and just another year under their belt. And with Fultz, hoping he's mentally okay and physically okay as well going into next year. So I don't know. I'm excited for them.
And one more quick thing before we sign off here. Smaller news, the Sixers signed Demetrius Jackson to the second two-way contract that we have available. We waived James Michael McAdoo. Demetrius Jackson was taken by the Celtics in the second round
Was
and
he
in the
in
2016
Notre Dame?
draft.
Is that him?
I'm sorry?
Is that the guy from Notre Dame?
Yeah, from Notre Dame, yeah. Yeah, we signed him to a two-way contract. Let's see if one of these two-way contracts pans out. That'll be nice. At least be, a rotation player,
Yeah,
because
it's so rotational.
God knows we need a functional wing to come off the bench.
Yeah, you never know. Like we said last week, they're just like, tryouts, really. And if
Yeah,
you
and
find
Demetrius
somebody.
Jackson is 23 years old, has only been in the NBA for a year, so maybe they
Yeah, that's the
can
guy. You can,
get.
that's what we talked about last week. Those are the guys you want to have these
Those are the
contracts.
guys you want to take a flyer on, not a 25-year-old power forward who we know what he is, and a 27-year-old shooting guard who, we already know who he is pretty much. It's good to take, flyers on a 22-year-old and a 23-year-old. We'll see what happens. And like I mentioned earlier, it seems like James Young was called up from the D League because he was in practice today, according to social media posts from the 76ers social media team. So maybe the Redick injury will see some more, James Young and maybe some more Justin Anderson, and maybe they'll eat into, TLC's playing time. We'll see. We just need some wings off the bench, man. Like
Yeah, you just need some.
Bayless, when he shoots well, counts as half a player, and then I really just don't know. TJ McConnell, also, I forgot to mention him. He had a great game on Monday, by the
Yeah, he
way.
did. He killed it
Yeah,
on
he
Monday.
killed it. He is a, a legitimate rotation player who is good. Like I think we like to meme a lot in today's meme society, but TJ McConnell is a legitimate NBA player and a key player, I think, for this team going forward. All right, well, that wraps up today's, epic, fiery, rant-filled episode of hashtag Sixers. For you, Christian, tell them where they can follow you on social media.
Everybody follow me on Twitter at Deluz2993, DELUZ2993. Give me a follow.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Sports Talk Xmas. That's SportsTalkXmas. And you can also find my work in the general section and the Sixers section of hashtag basketball.com. For Christian DeLuzio and Jordan Christmas, we're signing off.